following podcast is brought to you exclusively by the R&R Podcast Network. Welcome to RTW Rewind. Red Rob will take you on a journey through time to relive some of the greatest moments, matches, and personalities from the sport of professional wrestling. Now, here's your host of the show, Red Rob, Rob Francois.
Hey guys, welcome back to RTW Rewind. I am your host, Red Rob, Rob Francois. I hope everybody, and I do mean everybody, is doing well.
I'm not even going to let you get through your intro today, Rob. Nope. Welcome back to another edition of the Red Turtles Wrestling Podcast. He is the star of the show, ladies and gentlemen. Radicalized Rob!
I gave you an intro. That was very good, actually. Anybody needs Matt for hire, definitely check him out on HameenMediaGroup@gmail.com for all your voiceover needs. It is the one and only Matthew Schaffer Gage, here to talk some TNA early years. What's going on, buddy?
I'm chilling like a villain on penicillin, and I'm kicking it old school with you as I'm looking forward to my pin and Dylan, which is slang for my pin peeps. You know what that is. But yeah, I'm hanging out. Long day today. Got up this morning, recorded the Impact Attack. So I have already reviewed current Impact product today. I also recorded the Suck My Balls podcast, which is, of course, available here on Hami Media Group, Hacker Hameen, and, of course, on the Red Turtles Wrestling Network, R&R Pod Network, that is. And, you know, now we're back, and I've done a lot of editing as well. Looks like, in fact, while we're finishing talking, maybe that's why my computer has finally started to act a little better. I had finished encoding a video. So when we finish here, I'll start the process of uploading 20 gigabytes to YouTube. So, yes, Rob, I'm great. Yes, we watch AEW because apparently the Big Show Paul White has returned. And I mean, we could talk about it right now if you wanted to open up the show because by the time people listen to this, it's Sunday. But it's crazy.
Sure. Yeah.
Big Show. What do you think?
I think it's good for him because he gets to work. I'm not going to down him because, you know, I won't ever talk about anybody that needs, you know, needs the money or wants to work or, you know, not being used right and wants to be on TV or be a little more creative or go outside the box. But I will say this. From an AEW standpoint, they got to stop bringing in the older established talent and continue and focus on being an alternative. This is the same. It's a good segue because TNA did this very same thing and they never learned their lesson in the early years and
you
brought
don't
in.
Think I mean the way they're bringing him in? Yes, it's probably going to be in a wrestling match or two. I don't expect him to be full time active roster member. I think he'll probably be a commentator. Like that's probably going to be his ultimate role. I think that the Shaq thing, they'll probably do some sort of spin off with the Shaq and Big Show thing that never got paid off at WrestleMania, right? So, but other than that, maybe a tag team match here every now and then. Maybe there's some sort of, you know, giant versus giant match he does down the line to help put over somebody like a Wardlow. You know what I mean? But I just don't see him being actively on TV like Sting is, you know what I mean? Like I don't see him jumping into some sort of storyline. Do you? I mean, is that what you think is going to happen?
I think, in my honest opinion, and I could be wrong, but this is my opinion as a fan, given what I've heard and seen and read about regarding Tony Khan, I don't think he can help himself. I think he wants to put that, you know, the big names out there because people recognize him. He is, you know, to quote Dusty Rhodes, I'm the second most recognizable athlete next to Muhammad Ali. I mean, Paul White is known around the world as the Big Show. I mean, he's been around for 20-something years. I don't doubt that.
He's a 7-foot-10 giant, Daddy. Have you ever seen a man like that tower over another man? You know who the Big Show Paul White is. That's my Dusty.
Your Dusty's way better than mine. But no, I don't know, man. I didn't think Sting would be involved as much as he's been. And hopefully they stick with the cinematic stuff with him and not really, you know, take a lot of bumps. Show, while he looks amazing, and I'm sure he's still in great shape, doesn't need to be taken, and honestly, doesn't need to be selling for anybody, really, but, you know, if you want to bring him in like a Murderhawk Monster type of deal and, like, have him just destroy people for a while, like, that's cool, but what's the payoff? Like, what's the point of bringing him in? You want him to elevate you know, no offense, Darby Allin, who's 17 times smaller than him. Like, what's the point of having him in the ring?
Like I said, I think he's going to maybe 1 to 2 matches a year if they did anything.
Right.
I think the most shocking aspect of the fact is that Paul White actually signed with AEW. He's been
no
such
doubt.
A WWE loyalist
no doubt.
For the last 20 years, 20 plus years. And on top of that, you know, he just did like he was doing a TV series with
yep.
movies with WWE Studios. It's very interesting how that relationship may have broken down. To where they didn't see the 7-foot giant as a commodity anymore when he's in tip top shape.
Yeah,
you know, unfortunately, WWE from a writing standpoint has just flip flopped his character so much that his character itself is, you know, it's done in WWE, and you can't really rewrite a giant. You know, it's not like you. So like he's got to go somewhere else. So like if he was going to continue to wrestle. AEW would be the best option for him.
And then you need to destroy people. You need to absolutely murder people and not sell for 90% of their roster.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
Spin off Wardlow from Inner Circle and put him with a big show.
That's all you gotta do. Or take on Jake Hager or somebody. Or you know, take on Team Taz or at least Brian Cage. But
yeah.
Look, I don't know what happened behind the scenes. I don't know if this was reported or leaked out or if anybody knew this was coming or if this was a surprise.
It was shocking.
It was a surprise to me, so I'm assuming that nobody leaked it out. But I will say this. If, in fact, there was a falling out between him and Vince McMahon, do you think that hurts his Hall of Fame chances? Do you think Vince is going to hold a grudge because he went to AEW? Or do you think he can't begrudge, you know, Paul for wanting to work?
I don't think that Paul White will ever be inducted into the Hall of Fame while he's working for AEW.
That's obvious.
Maybe down the line in 30 years now, what is Big Show in his 40s, 50s, when he's getting up to the 70s, 80s, maybe at that point they'll induct him. But, you know, if he was you would think if you were the Big Show, maybe you would have played a little bit smart and told the WWE, I want to retire this year. And maybe they would have inducted you into the Hall of Fame. So that way you get that right away.
Yeah.
Granted, you then would be locked into a Legends deal, but still, at the very least, you would be getting paid. You'd still be part of the WWE, and you'd be using leverage. Unless maybe he tried that, and maybe AEW just offered him more money. That's what it comes down to.
I mean, they're saying he's going to commentate another edition, like another spinoff of Dark, which nobody
AEW
watches anyway.
Dark Evolution, supposed to be on Monday night, and it's going to be on an hour before the prior to Raw. So instead of starting at 8 Eastern, it'll start at 7 Eastern, and then it'll probably end right as Raw starts.
I don't know. It's a weird move to me.
It's weird. And it's YouTube, too.
Yeah, that's... I don't know. I mean, TNA, you know, made some traction with Twitch, but not that much.
Not that much.
No. And they promoted it pretty heavily, but... In any event.
TNA is what we're talking about today.
TNA is exactly... 10 minutes in, that's exactly what we're talking about, is NWA TNA, the early years. I am from the Nashville area, so TNA was founded right here in Middle Tennessee by Mr. Jeffrey Tiberius Jarrett III, along with his father.
J.G.J.
Jesus Christ. Mr. Chicken Salad himself, Jerry Jarrett. So you told me off air, Matthew, that you purchased the first ever TNA pay-per-view in June of 2002.
That's right. I was, at that time, I would have been like 12, 13 years old, 12 going on 13, just a young man.
A young pup.
A young pup. 2006 was when I graduated high school. So I probably had just graduated middle school, just getting ready to go into my freshman year of high school. In the eighth grade, where was I living? We were living in North Hills, California. This was like 1 year, 1 or 2 years prior before we moved to Montana, and 1 year prior to when we moved, before we moved to Chatsworth. No, I think we were just moving to Chatsworth that summer. So yeah, I just moved to Chatsworth, and I met one of my longtime friends now, my longtime best friends that I've known since then, since 2002, since we were kids. And then that's because we all met through another friend who all liked wrestling when we were growing up. So
now is that Chatsworth, Georgia, by any chance?
Chatsworth, California.
Okay. Cause there's one in Georgia. I don't want to get them confused because they're two completely different areas. Yes.
West Coast bias, baby. So that being said, I remember watching the pay-per-view in this apartment we were living in Chatsworth for sure. It was a nice little apartment building.
What were you wearing when you watched the pay-per-view?
I don't remember.
Well, you're telling me every other detail, so I'm just
asking. Well, that's their dates and times. I can't tell you what I ate that day or anything. It's a little bit more difficult.
I bet you probably had maybe, I don't know, bagel bites or pizza rolls, Doritos.
No.
I had my own wrestling snacks that I would eat pretty much every time.
My parents would negotiate with me on certain things. So it'd be like, okay, you can watch this, but you have to eat. You can only have this as a snack. All right, that's fair.
Oh, man, that's...
Hey, you know, I stayed pretty skinny. I can't
Well, I mean, you still are. And I mean, obviously...
That's what I'm saying.
You can look at me.
Parents must have done something right, right? They must have known what they were doing with my health. I'm probably not the best now as an adult, but as a child, I definitely stayed under a buck 50, even all the way into high school. So I've always just been a naturally a very lightweight guy. And yeah... You know, sometimes I get good treats, and you get maybe a sugar-free Rice Krispie treat, you know. But, you know, or maybe a glass of chocolate milk and some cookies. My mom every now and then would make me something like that. But, yeah, most of the time it was like, you know, okay, if you want to watch that, then here's your veggie platter. And you're like, all right, that's fine. That's fair. So what you do is you eat the carrots, right? And then you go outside and you take a rip off your bowl and then you come back inside and then you can eat the celery. That's when you dive into the celery.
Yeah, if it's broccoli though, I don't care how baked I am. I can't do the
unless
broccoli.
It's steamed. I can do steamed, but I can't do raw.
Yeah, no.
My dad does it raw. I don't know how he does it.
I don't either. I don't. You know, my grandmother eats raw onions too.
Oh, that's
like an apple. Just takes a bite out of it. Yeah.
Oh, what?
Yeah, no shit. Yeah,
that's nasty. Is that the one who lives here in Colorado?
No, she lives in Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah. So. What are we talking about?
TNA. Pay-per-view.
First pay-per-view, 2002.
$9.99.
See, I didn't order any of the TNA pay-per-views because that was a WWF mark at the time. So there was nothing else important at that point. WCW was already gone, so that's a thing. And then, you know, I heard this stuff was coming out. They advertised it on local cable. Is that how you heard about it?
I heard about it through cable, through in-demand pay-per-view.
Right.
And they must have paid to advertise it during the correct times of wrestling shows or specific channels, because that's when I would see it, right?
Yeah.
That being said, I really enjoyed the commercials they were coming out with, which is what got me intrigued. And two people got me intrigued, and that was AJ Styles,
absolutely,
who I hadn't seen since WCW had gone out of business. And he was just getting started there in 2000. And then I really was intrigued by seeing D'Lo Brown and X-Pac. And I was a big D'Lo Brown fan. So I was like, oh, D'Lo Brown and X-Pac? $10? I was like, come on, Dad, it's only $10. My dad was like, yeah, I guess you're right. It is only $10. Usually you ask me for $40 pay-per-views. So,
right.
Yeah, if you want to ask me, little did he know that it would turn into me asking for weekly tens that would lead up to the 40. But at least maybe I was able to validate it a little bit more to him. Like, yeah, but Dad, I'm getting four shows instead of one. It's right. Totally worth it. And you know I'm going to get this show every week. And my dad's like, all right, well, it's better than having you go out and do something stupid.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. Looking at the early roster in 2002, you had mentioned AJ Styles. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Abyss was there. He was an original. Alexis Lurie, Amazing Red, Animal from the Road Warriors, BG James, otherwise known as Road Dog Jesse James.
The Road Dog Jesse James!
Oh, you didn't know? Your ass better call somebody! God, I love that shit. When that dude, I'm telling you, that shit was over. Bob Armstrong. Bullet Bob, his father. CM Punk, which, you know what? I did not know that. CM Punk had a 2-year run in TNA. Were you a fan of his?
I was. I was a fan of CM Punk back then. In fact, back in the Dizzy, you know, on the online chat boards, if you will, or the TK websites as we used for streaming back then, I went under the handle of Fix TNA.
I remember you.
Dude.
No, I'm kidding.
No. Fix TNA, that was my online handle. So, yes, I was a huge fan. And then my buddy Chris was a huge CM Punk fan. So, That was the other reason why he watched TNA. Like, he didn't really like TNA, but he watched it for CM Punk and the Raven thing and all that good stuff, that storyline. And very interesting stuff how, you know, CM Punk ended up exiting the company and all that with the Ring of Honor and all the controversy that surrounded that. So because of the working relationship at the time. So very weird. But that's another time for another podcast. But yeah, CM Punk, you know, a couple good years there he had in TNA.
I did not realize that he was a TNA original. Also part of the roster was Chase Stevens, who was with them on and off for quite a while. Chris Harris obviously was teamed up with James Storm. They were the fuck was their tag team name?
America's Most Wanted.
That's right, America's Most Wanted, AMW. Christopher Daniels, who is now in AEW.
Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels.
He was in TNA for a long time, on and off. Kurt Hennig, which I didn't realize it was right about maybe a month or two after WWE fired him because of the plane ride from hell. He was in TNA for a little while, shortly you know, before his death, unfortunately.
I was going to say, like, I think he only had officially 4 to 6 matches maybe in TNA realistically, because I remember watching a YouTube video recently that actually went over that. They were like all of Kurt Hennig's, like I said, he did 4 or 6 matches in TNA wrestling. Very sad.
It's unfortunate, like, if he would have kept working in a prominent company or having a prominent role, or maybe was an agent or a producer, I mean,
who
knows?
He was drug free.
Yeah, I mean, if he was drug free, obviously he'd still be here. But it's just, it's unfortunate, man. When you're not in the spotlight anymore and you're not getting that adrenaline rush anymore, you know, a lot of guys don't know what to do. We've heard story after story after story of not being able to adjust to regular life once you're out of the ring. And especially that's pretty much the only thing he ever knew, you know, growing up with his dad being a wrestler as well. So you want to talk about one of the all-time greats, without a doubt. Kurt Hennig was just so silky smooth in the ring, and had such a great mind for the business. And just, and you know, it's funny, he's been gone for quite a while, but I mean, I think he was only like 37 or 8 when he died. Like,
he was young.
He was still a young guy. Just, God, it really sucks. Don West. I don't think Don West gets enough credit.
You remind me of Don West.
I don't have his voice. I don't scream at the top of my lungs during everything. I didn't like his commentary, but I liked the fact that he always shilled things, and he was a great salesman. I remember him, like, you know, trying to sell merchandise, and I mean, you're pretty good at that too. So
I was a big fan of Don West. I loved his over the top, like, selling for whatever it was. Yeah, because that's what wrestling is supposed to be. Like, it's supposed to be the announcers putting over it. And the fact that Don West, while you didn't like his over the top shenanigans at times, he was going to make sure to get that fucking storyline over. And when the end of the episode ended, you knew what the big thing was about TNA, why you were coming back next week. So, like, he did a good job in that. So, like, I can't fault him that. And then Tanay, of course, being there, which he's on the list as well. But Mike Tanay, you know, being his wingman there, the centered play-by-play commentator, great pairing. You know?
It was. I mean, they were two completely opposite people. So, I mean, they did work well off of each other. You know, I like Taz as well. Like, Taz and Tanay were pretty good. I can't stand Josh. I think Josh is an arrogant douchebag. And I don't know if that's just a character or if he is in real life, but Josh Matthews.
No, I think that's just a character.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I don't know him personally, but I mean, if that's a character, he does it very, very well. But to me,
definitely, because him and Ben are good buds.
Oh, great. All right, I'm going to cut that fucking part out now. That's great. Wait, thanks for giving me the fucking heads up ahead of time. But
I didn't know you were just going to say Josh Matthews in the middle.
Josh Matthews is a fucking cocksucker, okay? I said it.
Oh, interesting.
I will cut that out. But no, Don Wessel's very over the top, and you're right. Like, he definitely put everything over the way he should with extreme enthusiasm. I will say that he is better than Mauro Ranallo. Ben's not friends with him, is he?
No, but I'm a big Mauro Ranallo fan, but that doesn't matter to you.
Tell me, no. Tell me what you like about Mauro.
Mauro, there's a couple things. First of all, what's Mauro's last name?
Ranallo.
So, and what do you think he's a descendant of? What type of heritage do you think he is?
I think he's Egyptian.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I like the fact that he's got a different, unique style. I thought he was Italian, to be honest.
He is. He is.
I know. Yeah, he's Italian. That's why I'm a big fan of Mauro Ranallo. A, B, you know, Mauro Ranallo is bipolar. and he's openly been an advocate for it. So someone who I can identify and understand who, you know, in essence, I'm almost kind of trying to follow that same path, if you will, in some format of entertainment. So, and I like his catchphrases. I like him being loud. I don't care if he overshadows the other WWE announcers. Cause you know what? The other WWE announcers, most of them, if not all of them, suck. So I don't need to hear them. So yeah, I want to hear Moro take over because Moro is the star when he's on the mic. If you're going to hire a solo guy who literally calls boxing, has been calling boxing by himself, and bring him into a WWE-focused area and have him call something and don't think he's not going to try and be the star of the show, don't think a bipolar guy's got an ego to try and be like, yeah, I'm taking over, you're tripping. And he might not – and the thing is, he's not even subconsciously trying to do that. He's just trying to do his job the best that he can, and if he outshines you, that's how it is, baby.
You're really passionate about Mauro Ranallo.
I like Mauro Ranallo.
The Egyptian Thunder. Look, he's just he's too overdramatic for me. That's just that's just me. Like, look, it's all subjective, right? Like,
but
I'm not saying
else in wrestling right now sells the way he sells that product. He sells the content. So when you watch it, he gets it into. When someone jumps off the cage and he goes, "Oh my God, Mamma Mia!" You go, "What?" And you turn your head because what is Moro freaking out about now? Because you want to see what he's putting over. Like, he does a good job.
I will say that Excalibur is the poor man's Mauro Ranallo. Like, I think he's a wannabe Mauro, but he's not as good.
No, Excalibur is a poor man's Kevin Kelly.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think of that. That's you
he's
know
a poor
Kevin
man's
Kelly.
Kevin Kelly.
And Kevin Kelly is great, by the way.
He's top three.
Yeah.
When I was 16 years old, I sent Kevin Kelly an email, and he went out of his way to respond to me. So,
oh, cool. That's
he's in
cool.
my heart always. As a, he gave me some very encouraging advice as a kid who wanted to do this and do all the announcing and production and all that. So Kevin Kelly, I've already told Michael Jargo and Rick, if they ever get Kevin Kelly on Destino, you better have me on that fucking podcast so I can show them the email because I still have it.
Kevin Kelly is also partnered up with our friend Bob Evans in as part of the Wrestle Life. Kevin Kelly is giving instructions on broadcasting and a lot, so you can sign up for that.
If you get Kevin Kelly, you better bring me on.
Yes, I will. And if I get Ken Shamrock, who's still ducking me.
Well, he's ducking me. He heard. Yeah, he heard the challenge was thrown down that I could take him with 15 guys. So
yeah, now he said 14. I'm cool with 15. Was
credible threat.
It was too much.
15 guys.
Yeah,
I won't be doing much. I'll be you know directing traffic. But go ahead.
Elix Skipper, who I've had
time, Elix Skipper.
I've had the
man who did a moonsault off the top of the six-sided triple cage.
We'll never forget that. Like that, that was probably the craziest thing to this day that I've seen. Like we've seen all the crazy ECW shit off the rafters and all that, but that dude, that could have gone horribly wrong.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah, it was.
Fun fact, Elix Skipper is a general manager of Applebee's, and since you brought it up so many goddamn times, Georgia.
I was going to say that. You stole my thunder.
I know about Elise Skipper. I've reached out to him before for an interview. He doesn't take interviews. He's not interested.
Yeah, I tried reaching out on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn too? Yeah, me too. Nice guy. Very polite.
No, he is. Yeah, and I've gotten a lot of interviews, actually, out of LinkedIn. So
it's a very professional way to get it.
Yes, absolutely. James Mitchell. How can we be remiss if we don't mention James Mitchell, who still scares the shit out of me to this day?
Yeah, yeah. And then we got Francine, who's, of course, a friend of the podcast with your boy.
Eyes up here.
Ian.
Yeah,
that's
right.
And of course, with the Two-Man Power Trip, formerly of that brand. But they're all still friends and buddies, best friends. So nothing bad blood there. So yeah, Eyes Up Here, Francine. Check them out. They're also on Feeney's Creative Control Network, so you can check them out. The Louse.
The Louse.
As Miss Russo likes to call him.
How can we forget?
Glenn Gilberte.
He's actually Italian. I don't know if you knew that.
I know he is.
Okay. Disco Inferno, which everybody knows him by. Can you believe the people on Twitter that still say to this day that Disco wasn't over and ask what did he do in professional wrestling and how he wasn't a draw?
I don't get it. He can still continues to get booked to this day. So
to this day,
obviously, if he wasn't relevant in pro wrestling, like other people are not relevant, he would not get booked. He is still relevant because A, he knows how to sell a story. B, knows how to work smart. C keeps himself in good condition, and at the drop of a dime can spark up controversy in a moment's notice to get people talking. So that's all the makings of somebody who can draw and get people to pay or watch your product.
That's absolutely right. So, honestly, if you go back and watch those old Nitros, dude, I don't care if he was only the TV champ or maybe the US champ, his shit was over. Like, when that music hit, people were dancing, kind of like Fandango. But people dug him, dude, and he got some very, very good reactions from those crowds.
I wish they had brought him in with like the FBI and let them do some sort of full-blooded Italians in WWE when they did the merger thing. Other than, of course, you know, obviously he's mentioned on the podcast. He went home, let his contract run out because he was still signed, and then started with TNA, obviously, here in 2002. So,
yeah. Which, look, man, I don't begrudge him in that. I mean, he never worked in WWE, and he doesn't care.
No.
One person that did work in WWE was Jerry Lawler's illegitimate son, Grandmaster Sexay, who is no longer with us. Rest in peace. Brian Christopher Lawler was in TNA. I loved him in Too Cool with Rikishi and Scotty Too Hotty. I thought he had a great character. He was very entertaining. Looked like a million bucks. Had the lineage with his dad. I don't know what kept him from getting a bigger run in WWE. Maybe it was his demons. I don't want to speculate.
Drugs are bad. Drugs are bad.
Yeah, they are. They can be. I mean, if you know, use them appropriately. I'm not an advocate for drugs.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
I picked a bad day to stop amphetamines. James Storm, as we mentioned earlier, is a TNA original.
About your damn look.
I've had the pleasure of meeting him on several occasions because he lives about 20 minutes away from me. And he goes to local comedy clubs. And
you get drunk with him? Hang out with him?
No, but he's always cool to me whenever I see him.
Hang out with him.
Doesn't remember me at all, but...
That's what I'm saying. You should become best friends with him.
I would love to, because literally, like, he doesn't live that far from me. And he is in... Hell,
you gotta just get him drunk, and he'll like just buy him beer one night. Just keep buying him, and he'll remember you.
He probably will. Jay Briscoe.
Oh, the Briscoe Bros. These are young lads here.
Really young, yes. Obviously, Jeff Jarrett, co-founder. Jeremy Borash, who is now with WWE, which I'm shocked that they hired him because I didn't. Given how many years he was with TNA, I didn't think Vince would ever hire him, but.
NXT,
yeah, but I mean, the old man's got to approve, don't you?
Yeah, Triple H is running a lot of NXT. That's pretty much he's in control of it, most of it. And so what happened is they brought in Jimmy Paradise, who was working for TNA as well as one of their lead production and graphics designers and After Effects and did all that. And then they brought in Jeremy. I'm sure Jimmy. The Triple H said, "Who else do you need?" And he was like, "I need Jeremy."
Yeah, and obviously Joseph Park III is there.
He came in, that's all that connection,
But Borash, dude, Borash is so good. Whether it's, you know, a ring announcer, which he was a fantastic ring announcer, he transitioned to backstage.
Ring announcer. Didn't like him on commentator, but he was a good ring announcer.
Yeah, and fantastic mind for the business and promoter and producer. And, I mean, he could do it all. Jerry and Borash, I don't want to say he's underrated because that's what Wanglin likes to do. But I will say he's perfectly rated. He's perfectly rated, as Chadster likes to say.
Had a lot of Jerrys here, though. We had Jeffs, we had Jeremy, and then Jerry Lynn. Little J's action there.
The whole fucking show.
Jerry Lynn.
Very underrated as a wrestler. I loved his stuff, no matter where he was. I wish he had a better run in WWE. Obviously, he had injuries but he doesn't get enough respect for... How good he was, especially at a time when TNA was just starting out. He was he played a big part in there. Former ECW original as well. Now in AEW as a producer or coach or whatever the fuck they want to call it down there. But
Jimmy Rave we have, and what was he, Tajiri? I mean, those are rest in peace. Didn't Jimmy Rave pass away in the last couple of years or something like that?
Actually, he was the one that had his arm amputated. I think that's why he.
That's what it is. He had his arm amputated. Okay, I knew there was something recently about Jimmy Rave.
In fact, Jerry Lynn actually just tweeted out on January 11th, "Help Jimmy Rave." So there's your connection there.
There you go.
But yeah,
Ken Shamrock, who I already mentioned, I can take with 15 guys. And then what about Kid Cash, dude? You know what? As a kid growing up, I did not like Kid Cash.
I did not
either. Hated his guts.
Yes.
But as I became an adult, and he got a shot in WWE for a little bit, in the WWE CW, I was like, I like this guy.
Yeah.
Because I understood his, you know, I understood what the heel was doing at that point. And I was like, he's good at being a heel. So that's why I liked him.
Yep. Low-key.
Senshi, with my voice, did I talk like this when I should have decided to be a voiceover actor?
He should have been in Mortal Kombat.
Dude, he should have been a voiceover actor, period. Like,
no, yeah, that's true.
He should have, like, if he had pursued that instead of wrestling, could have made bank. And the movie guy just passed away, that should be Senshi.
Yeah, absolutely right. Why do you think Low-key didn't get a great run in WWE?
I think there's a number of different reasons. I think that he kind of goes by his own, he floats kind of by his own, you know, wind of his own sailboat.
Yeah.
He doesn't, he's not going to be told what to do. He'll do, he'll tell you in a polite way, but he's not going to be told really what to do.
Agreed. Yeah. No, I agree with that one. Monty Brown, Pounce. God, he fucked people up with that move. Former New England Patriot. Tough bastard.
The Pounce! I fucking loved Monty Brown.
I did too, and I don't know why he never got a run anywhere else. You know,
he went to WWECW, and he was Montel Vontavious Porter, or Martin Vontavious Porter. Not Martin, or Martin Von Ellis, or something like that. Something
he wasn't MVP, but...
No. Von Ellis, or something like that, but yeah.
Goddamn, now I gotta look it up.
He left for family reasons, I want to say. Marcus Corvan.
Marcus Corvan, yeah.
He left for family reasons, I want to say. It had something to do with either a family member, he had to take care of that family member, or something like that. So he left the business altogether, and I think he had opened up his own gym or something and did something like that.
He was so good, dude. He really was. He was a lot better, like Ahmed Johnson.
Monty Brown is the 2002 version of Bobby Lashley, really.
That's
what it
a good
is.
Call. Yeah, that is a good
and
call.
And I'm not just saying because he's a black guy. I'm just saying because he's, you know, a former military guy, former collegiate all athletes. He's a big dude. You know, he's got big, broad shoulders. And, you know, he's got a very similar type of moveset and athlete work rate as well. So,
yeah.
You know, he's kind of that. He was kind of our version of Bobby Lashley back then, the towering big black guy. I mean, not to say it, but really what it is.
Percy Pringle the third, better known as Paul Bearer. I had to transition off of that quickly. I actually had a chance to meet Percy a couple times. I was an assistant manager at KFC in an undisclosed location in Connecticut. He flew into Bradley Airport for a house show at the Hartford Civic Center. It was a Friday night. We were about to close. And I was on drive-thru speaker, just counting out the tills for the end of the night. And you couldn't mistake that voice. Now, obviously, it wasn't over the top, but, I mean, he still had a pretty unique speaking voice. So I thought about it, like, that sounds really, really familiar. And I won't tell you what he ordered because it was a shit ton of food. But
okay.
I ran up to the window, and it was him. He must have rented, like, a big, giant Cadillac or something. Because he's a big guy.
Get him to say anything in his Undertaker voice?
I did not. I didn't want to be a mark. I didn't want to be
16,
a mark.
You totally had the right to be a mark at that point, though. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I was in my early
20s. If you're 20s. A kid... Oh, you're in your 20s? Okay.
Yeah, I was in my early 20s.
Yeah, and you're an adult. I get it. When you're a kid, like, I did that all the time. Like, I... yeah, no, I would meet wrestlers, and I would see them out and about, and I'd be like, what? Can I have that? And they'd be like, blah, 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 and I'd run away. It was great.
But no, Percy was a great guy, and I got to meet him at WrestleMania 27 Access in Atlanta, Georgia.
They did he remember you from the KFC days?
I wish he did. That would have been a great story to bring that. I could have lied, but no, he didn't remember me at all. But very, very gracious, and, you know, sat and talked to me for a couple minutes there at Access. Just a really cool dude. It was a really badass set that they had up. It was like the Undertaker graveyard, and they had all the tombstones from all the victims of the streak. They had his throne there from the ministry, which was that was fucking badass. I sat in that shit. That was cool. But then they had a funeral parlor set up from, you know, his old talk show set, and it was fucking identical. So I got my picture taken with him. But, man, super, super nice guy. Rick Steiner. Smarter of the two Steiner brothers. You couldn't tell character-wise, because character-wise, like, I think NWA said, you know, like, part of the storyline was he got in a car accident, so he's a little fucked in the head. Like, that's kind of the character he played as a dog-faced gremlin. But he's actually, what, a school teacher?
Yeah, he's a very intelligent man.
Very, very intelligent man. Like, George Animal Steel was a college professor. And like,
I'll tell you what, I would not want Rick Steiner as my fucking PE teacher or something.
Not right.
Physical.
Play dodgeball. Yeah.
Drop and give me 20, boy.
Okay, yeah. Yes, sir. He's just barking at you while you're trying to do your push-ups and shit.
You don't do it right, he fucking Steiner lines you out of your fucking shoes.
God damn it, that'd be horrible.
He was a bad motherfucker, dude. Him and his brother, like, were super, super badasses. And eventually Scott got into TNA Impact as well. But, man, Rick was tough, dude. Him and his brother could suplex anybody.
It's crazy.
They're amazing. And Rick Steiner was such a tough fucker.
Then we had Ron the Truth Killings as he's going
Ron
by
the Truth Killings, still employed.
Ever NWA TNA heavyweight champion.
That's right.
Black heavyweight champion, African-American.
Yeah, not the first ever, but the first African-American. Yeah, still employed at 78 years old, still looks like $1 million, still funny
black
as always.
Black crack, dog, I'm just saying. Black History Month, shout out to my peeps.
He's so good, man. Like,
he's a good-looking dude.
He is a good-looking dude, too, and still built like a brick shit house.
Yeah.
Sabu, another ECW original, played a part in TNA. Were you ever a Sabu fan?
No.
I wasn't either.
Not at all. Then the next guy, you had Chico. Hey, Chico, you know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here. Razor Ramon.
He was pretty puffy when he was there.
He was a little puffy.
Yeah.
And we had the stupidest character in Impact Wrestling history, Shark Boy.
You don't think Cheeseburger is the stupidest character?
No. Okay. No. That's fair. Like cheeseburgers.
Me too.
And at least that was unique. Shark Boy, you were just like, come on, Shark Boy. You're just a boy. Now you're a shark. Come on.
I always imagine he was like...
That sounds like something he wrote when he was a kid in his room, and that became his wrestling character. You know what
I'm
saying?
Yeah, or he was like, you know, like the illegitimate son of... who was the shark gimmick in the Dungeon of Doom?
Oh, God. Really? No, we're not going to go there.
No? Okay.
Let's talk further about Shark Boy here. So Shark Boy... Did you know, fun fact, Shark Boy became a very wealthy person because of a movie?
Sharknado?
No. Hmm. Back in, I don't know the year, it would have been either 05, 06 time range, DreamWorks came out with a movie called Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
Wow.
DreamWorks was not aware that he had smartly copyrighted his name. And so they put out the movie and did all this stuff. So he took them to court and... got them to settle for an undisclosed large amount.
No shit.
So he was either – I don't know what it was. I don't know if he got royalties or he got a flat fee. But shortly thereafter, we did not see much of Shark Boy wrestling very often, regularly. So I imagine he got paid, laid, and he was made. He did exactly what Cartman does. Start up, sell out, cash in, bro down. I mean, that's it.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I didn't realize he was actually in WCW, so maybe there is a connection to the Dungeon of Doom. Just saying.
There you go. The Shark Boy and Lava Girl. That's why he got me. It's a true story. Look it up.
Six Pac. Sean Waltman. Didn't realize he was in TNA.
X Pac. That's why I told you I watched TNA. It was for him and D'Lo Brown. D'Lo Brown eventually comes on, but X Pac definitely was. I was a big fan of X Pac for sure.
Looks like he's only there for maybe like 6 months.
So. Sean Waltman, a.k.a. Yeah. The Seanster.
The Seanster.
On his first run. He makes a couple different runs in TNA over the years. But
rounding out is Trinity.
Which I totally forgot about.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
So there's your early 2002 TNA roster, Rob.
Quite the roster to start out. We've all seen the promotions get in already established talent, you know, like an Animal who probably did a few one-offs. Sabu was the ECW guy, Jerry Lynn, Rick Steiner, Scott Hall. But they still had a decent amount of younger talent, too. Like we said, CM Punk, Chase Stevens, Chris Harris, James Storm, Jimmy Yang, Kid Cash, guys like that, the Briscoes. So they had a good mixture of indie guys and established talent. And look, I used to watch TNA when they were on Fox Sports Net.
Yeah, so did I.
That's the first time I actually ever watched a TNA show. I don't even know when it was. It was
8
like
8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, because I remember watching it at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
There you go. There you go. So
Fridays.
And they had like a timer too, like yeah, a countdown
the
clock.
Matches were like, it was like sports style. They sports
right,
style.
Right.
I liked it like that too.
I did too. I liked the tunnels that they had. Like their entrance set was cool. So I liked the presentation. First time I'd seen AJ Styles, I'm like, wow, this guy is, he can go. Like, this guy is amazing. I mean, dare say he's phenomenal.
To give a little backstory, they do the weekly pay-per-views, right?
Yeah.
And then eventually they get on to Fox Sports Net, and then they start pushing their monthly pay-per-views. And then from there, from going to Fox Sports Net, they went dark for about 6 months when their television contract ended with them because they wanted more money from Fox Sports Net. And Fox Sports Net was like, no, this was just right. On Friday,
yeah.
So they went dark online, kind of back to weekly pay-per-views almost.
Yeah.
Not really even back. They were kind of shown it for free online, like a recorded show, and then you could still order the monthly pay-per-views.
Right.
And then from there, that's when they got the Spike TV deal. After that, and it took off. After that,
yeah, it did. And I enjoyed it. We'll get into this a later day because I do want to do multiple shows, with the early years and the mid years and all that. But I did enjoy the Spike TV product. I enjoyed seeing the Voodookin Mafia and stuff like that. Like, people are like, it's just a ripoff of DX or NWO or whatever. I don't care. Like, to me, still kind of trying to break down the fourth wall. It was fun. Like, I enjoyed stuff like that. Fucked finishes was what I really hated because, it seemed like almost every main event, Jeff Jarrett or somebody else would do a fucking run in, and you wouldn't have, or you'd have a bunch of dusty finishes, or, it was very rare you came out with a true winner for a long time in TNA. And I was never a fan of that. I don't mind cliffhangers and stuff like that, but eventually fans aren't going to take disqualifications or count outs or shit like that. Like, they want to see a true winner. And I thought Impact did way too much of that.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think that they've definitely over the years tried to do different gimmicks, whether it was the global championship or the championship where they had the judges with Cody Rhodes was a champion and Moose was a champion. That was, I don't even remember what that was. That the Global Force champion or the Impact World, Impact Global. They had all these weird names.
They did. I don't know.
In the later years. But like initially on set, I remember because I've got the DVD. It's called TNA Year One, where they talk about their very first year, right?
Yeah.
And they talk about the first show almost didn't even go on the air on pay-per-view, that, there were so many problems going through that and that the funding that was falling through then. But they eventually, of course, got on the air. And then shortly thereafter, Dixie Carter was brought in from Panda Energy with the writers, obviously to, the other writers, not that writer. to bring it to get TNA rocking and rolling from a financial standpoint. So,
what did you think of Dixie? Do you think she got influenced way too much by other wrestlers or other people?
She
there?
Was a mark. I mean, she was a wrestling mark.
So she was a female Tony Khan.
Pretty much. But a worse one because at Tony Khan.
Wait, is there anybody worse than Tony Khan?
That's what I'm saying. I think Dixie Carter is. I know people like to say that Dixie would never do this. I don't know. I remember watching Impact and Dixie every fucking week. We get a big surprise. At least right. Tony doesn't do that. He'll just be like, we signed Paul White. Go ahead, argue. At least I'll respect him in that regard.
Yeah, right. No, that's fair. That's a fair point.
Play the fucking surprise bullshit game and then try to fuck. And then you show up. Right. And then week after week, you're crying wolf.
I used to see her at TNA events in Nashville, just glad handing and talking to people in the crowd. And, she loved to be a hostess. You know what I mean? Like, she loved to mingle.
I bet you she hosted you, Rob, huh?
I wish. She was hot, dude.
Radicalized you.
No. Anyway, she just loved being the center of attention. So she liked being well known. She liked schmoozing with people, and she was a nice lady. I will say that. Like, I haven't heard too many people say anything bad about her personally.
No, I don't think personally she's probably a bad person. She was just a wrestling mark. Like, the thing is,
a shitty manager.
Decide one. I mean, Grant, good for Jeff getting a mark, but like in general, if someone came to me 10 years ago and said, hey, you want to start a wrestling company? You got a bunch of money. If I had done it, I would have been an idiot.
Right.
Now, I'd still be kind of an idiot because, like, it's a money pit. But, like, at least I would know what I would be getting myself into, or I'd have the right people to call and be, like, to bring in and be like, hey, make sure I don't get fucked over. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, but she, on the other hand, didn't have that. So she came in just as the money market first, and then she eventually started putting her hands into the cookie jar, slowly.
Which everyone seems to do, and I still think Tony Khan, we've seen that with the whole thing with merging with AEW and Impact, sort of, you know, since we're already on
working
the Impact
together,
subject.
Right.
But you see him in the, you know, the commercials and stuff.
Love those things.
He's getting himself more on TV now.
You know what the thing is, though? I think people have to understand, too, from his perspective, how many people like myself or other people may have criticized him initially at the onset. We were like, man, he kind of looks like a dork. What did he do? He flipped it, and he turned himself into an egotistical owner prick on Impact Wrestling. So in that regard, he leaned right into it. Like, he leaned into the egotistical rich boy, and I'm okay with that. At least if you're going to give me some sort of a character, whether you like the character or not, at least he's leaning into it and trying versus just awkwardly showing up and going, and yeah, Tony, we're going to do this. No, now he's showing up in a fucking – last on Impact, he showed up in a fucking, like, kimono shirt and shit. He's got glasses on. He's like, I could fucking buy Impact if I want to, and I'm just making donations there. And I'm just like, this is – I'm like, bravo, Tony. Good job. Like,
I will give him credit for that. You're right. He is not shying away from that. And he is owning that impression of him that the fans have given him. So I will – that's very good. That's an astute point.
He's very keen at the – you have to give Tony Khan at least credit on that. He does listen to his fans. Now, whether he makes those adjustments or not, whether you like them, he at least – you know he
listens. He still books like shit, in my opinion.
Right. Whether you like his booking or not, he's still a fan at the end of the day. And he's still listening to all the freaking podcasts, I bet.
Including mine. I know he listens to RTW Rewind. Yeah. So
okay, well,
shout out to my boy, Tony.
Give me a holler.
Slide into my DMs,
I got a
bro.
Degree in production, visual production. Work sports. Give me a job.
Hey, look, TNA. Matt, we'll get back to TNA in a second. But, I mean, they're all connected, right? It's all part of the family. In a roundabout way, 6 degrees of separation. If I was in that position, and I know if you were in that position, and you were a wrestling fan, and you had the keys to the company, I'm pretty sure we would do the same exact thing. Well, maybe we'd write better stories, but...
Well, I would hire people that I trust at this point that I think could put on a good production. I would sit in with the creative, and I would ultimately, quote-unquote, be the one that has to make the final decision.
Right, but everybody in like there. He just maybe doesn't have the wrong...
No, they're not writers. This is what I'm saying. I would put the correct people in place who know how to write television properly, trust the fact that what they're saying is going to work, and then bounce ideas off of each other to create something great. From there, then I would sit back. Maybe I'd be a ring announcer for Dark. Maybe I'd do something. I'd run the door or something stupid, something where you won't even know I'm the owner. But you know what I mean? I would still put the work in. I wouldn't sit back in my office. Now, what Tony Khan is doing is he's writing the show by himself. He's probably getting input. He's probably going to Jericho and going, hey, I've got this idea. What do you think? And Jericho goes, yeah, I like that. I'm thinking about doing this, 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 this. Tony goes, okay, I think we're doing this, 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 this. Okay, cool. I'm going to go write it. Or maybe, okay, cool. I'm going to write the scene. Jericho, you say what you got to say. There's nobody sitting back there at the team, even 3 to 5 people writing out the script, segmenting out when they're going to go to breaks. It took them like 6 months to figure out when to do commercial and commercial correctly. So like,
that's a good
there's
point.
Nobody doing that. And even they have openly admitted they don't have a team of writers. I'm not sitting here just to bag on them. I mean, that's just how they've set up their company.
But this is where you and I will, I don't want to say butt heads, but we have a contract of styles.
I'm not saying that I agree with this style. I'm just saying that's what it is.
Hold on. I'm an old school guy. I believe in wrestling personalities booking the territory. I don't want a team of writers in there writing television. I want people that know the sport of professional wrestling, not some slick Hollywood writer like yourself.
I'm not talking like that. No, I'm not talking like that.
But I think
Ben Hameen, Stevie Richards, and Vince Russo. There's your team of fucking writers. You get what I'm saying? Like
no.
Three guys like that or something.
Okay. I thought you were talking like Vince McMahon bringing in
Hollywood jagoffs. No, I'm going to call people that I know who work in the wrestling business.
Okay, no, that's fair. Say, that's fair. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were going in a different direction.
Oh, God, no.
I read the room wrong. I'm sorry.
We're already there. That's the issue. Why do we want to keep that up?
No, true. But he does have the people there that know how to book wrestling. I mean, whether it's Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, Jim Ross, even Tony Schiavone. Jerry Lynn, you know, Dean Malenko. He's got people there, Jake the Snake. I mean, he's got people that know the wrestling business.
Well, I mean, if Arn Anderson walks up to you a couple times and wants to give you advice and you think you're cocky or arrogant or don't want to listen to him, at some point you're going to stop giving a fuck.
That's a good point, because we obviously saw Jim Ross go off on a tangent publicly about that very subject. Why do you think Jim Ross felt the need to come out and publicly say something
like
that?
Because he was pissed and he was tired of the bullshit. Yeah. And he knows he can say whatever the fuck he wants to say because he's got the respect and clout to do so.
Right.
And no one's going to argue what Jim Ross has to say about professional wrestling.
But obviously no one's listening.
You shut the fuck up and you shut the fuck up. But right. those kids don't get that. No, yeah. they went back to playing fucking Nintendo Switch or fucking Fortnite or whatever. I don't know.
God, I fucking hate Fortnite. I know. That game sucks so much. Wrapping up TNA for this week. What do you think they could have done a better job of in the early days? Because obviously they didn't have the finances to compete with WWE. It was pretty much a grassroots campaign, right? Before Dixie came in, what do you think Jeff Jarrett's aspirations were? Did you think he wanted to compete with WWE, or do you think he just wanted to carve out his own niche in the business?
Well, I mean, initially, I think that they wanted to give an opportunity, not for just for themselves to make money, obviously, but for...
Because WWE was gone, you know, right? So, essentially, you know, WWE was the... And still, you know, arguably is the biggest game in town.
But. Well, I mean, it is. But yeah, so you had WWE and then you had Indies, and you can argue Ring of Honor, you know, XPW, right? The offshoot of the ECW.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was little stragglers out there, but there really wasn't a clear cut option for weekly television that something was being produced. And their initial concept of the weekly pay per view idea was, you know, if you quote unquote groundbreaking, if you will, because nobody else was doing that in regards to wrestling, right? They might have had, I don't know, some sort of adult content maybe that was weekly, or I don't know, some sort of, that's probably all I can think of, porn. Porn is probably the only thing.
Do you think that was their only option because they didn't have a TV deal yet?
I think that they knew that at the time Vince McMahon had bought up a lot of the opportunities that were going to be available.
Right.
And let's go the route of trying to make money right away instead of playing to the corporations, right? We can go pay-per-view where we can do whatever we want and
that's
then
fair.
See if we can sell that show to maybe somebody who's able to, who's willing to take it like that, right?
Yeah.
Because once they get to Fox Sports Net, they do kind of tone it down a little bit.
They did. And they were already at Universal at that point, right? So at least they had a home. It wasn't, you know, they weren't on the road a lot, if at all. So they had that mainstay, which Bischoff was smart to do with MGM and Disney and MGM Studios, you know, early on in the Nitro days, just having that one home where you can, you know, keep your overhead
low.
The
MGM Studios was fat. I loved
it
that studio.
It really was pretty cool.
I loved how the ring rotated. I was such a mark for all that shit.
Yes. And then they brought it outdoors every now and then, like for early Nitros. Like, that was cool. But that kept your overhead low because you weren't traveling. So, you know, Jeff Jarrett was smart to take TNA to Universal Studios and make that his home. Sure, I mean, you didn't have typical wrestling fans there. A lot of the crowd were people that just paid to get into the park, and, you know, we got a free wrestling show. It was like going to a state fair, you know, like Matt and Jeff Hardy talk about doing that.
It was a great contractual setup for them.
Right. But that's smart because, again, it keeps your overhead low because you're not on the road. So they were able to pay guys, you know, that had name value to come in and work for them. So, you know,
and I imagine if I was, you know, if I'm just guessing, they probably paid or contractually used that lot. But at the same time, I'm sure they probably received some sort of residuals for monthly, you know, ticket prices as well because people attended the show maybe or something. You know what I mean?
But even before that, they were smart enough to, you know, to be at the Tennessee, the Nashville Fairgrounds what they call the Asylum, which I've seen several shows there, but that was their home for quite a while too. So they've always been smart and did a good job about being able to pinch pennies and save money and still be able to, again, pay for some of the, you know, some of the guys that you knew, you know, from TV, and still, you know, have their own, you know, fresh crop of stars come in there. So you got to give, I don't know, people give Jerry and Jeff a lot of shit for not being great businessmen, but on the contrary, Jerry obviously over the years was known for really, really, you know, not paying his guys a lot, which, again, you know, that's his business. He can do whatever he wants. Guys can either work there or not work there. We've heard Steve Austin tell stories about having to eat cans of tuna and raw potatoes because, you know, the Tennessee territory was not paying out very well. But I've talked to guys like Brian Blair and Jim Brunzel and guys like that that worked there for Jarrett in the earlier days, and he paid great. But in order to make money, it's spend money. And that's what TNA did in the early days, just to get their name out there. Like you said, buying the advertisements, you know, before Raw or stuff like that, or, you know, buying the ad spots so you know who they are. Once Panda Energy came in, it was a whole new ballgame. And that's when they really, really took off.
I mean, as soon as they get to Spike, that's really where we start to see TNA take off, to be honest. I mean, they went through the rough years, you know, whether it be the weekly pay-per-views, then that falling apart, going to Fox Sports Net, that deal falling through. And like I mentioned, going dark on the internet for a good 4 to 6 months, when realistically we were still in the infancy of the internet, when all you could really do was stuff like Ustream. Remember that back in the day and stuff like that? So other than that, you know, you don't really have a lot going right now.
One thing they had going for him that was good was obviously our friend Vince Russo, who came in 2002 and booked for them. Bro. Vince doesn't like to talk wrestling much anymore, but do you want to plug his coffee while we're at it?
Yeah, you should go to the Russo Bros Coffee. Get his coffee at thebrosters.com.
Dude, how many times have you plugged it, man?
Use the code RUSSO5LB and you'll get yourself a bag of Russo Bro Coffee from thebrosters.com. Russo Bro Coffee. Bro, get this coffee.
Vince Russo loved his time in TNA. He said it was, you know, one of his favorite times being a wrestling writer, was working in TNA. He was there several times, obviously, on and off over the years, but he did leave his mark on the early TNA years with Ed Ferrara, who also was his co-writer.
So, yeah, I was excited about all the content that we're putting out. You know, people always shat on Russo, and I definitely was one of those people where if I didn't like something he put together, I might have said something like, I'd be interested, you know, someone talked to him about the electrified cage is what I'd be interested. No one's ever really ever asked Russo about that. So, I mean, I know that he has said that at the time he was only a consultant, so they were saying fire Russo, so it wasn't really his fault. But I just – or if he heard it, that, you know, just made him laugh even more. but, like, I'd really like to hear that, you know, what was the mindset to putting together. Because next week, or at least it's coming up on an AEW pay-per-view. They're doing an exploding match, an exploding barbed wire, old school Mid South type match, I guess. I don't know. Or Japanese.
That's like Japanese death match stuff.
Death match. Yeah, there you go. So exploding barbed wire match. Kenny Omega versus
the Marks, dude.
Marks or something. I think that's what's happening at Revolution.
The boys are the biggest marks, and they're booking their own shit. That's the problem I have with that.
I mean, it could be cool. We talked about it last week on AEW, like the fuse. Like, if done right, it's something that has, and the effects look cool. Could be cool.
Like the effects of using a sledgehammer on the fucking throne and the fucking little pyro.
I was thinking more like Wrestling Society X. Yeah.
Gotcha. If anything we learn with AEW, they don't use effects the right way.
I'm not going to comment on that. I don't know if they do. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. I like some of their packages.
I like your package.
Well, that's a little weird.
Where can we find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Matthew_Traffer. Each and every week, I review AEW. It's called Light the Fuse with myself, Ben Hameen, and Chris Silvio. So it's just me and the vets hanging out, getting the breakdown, and giving you the breakdown of all of AEW's wild escapades, as we mentioned some of them here tonight. And, of course, you're listening to this on Sunday, I hope you listened to the latest episode where we break down Paul White's debut, or at least his announcement, that is. I also, of course, review each and every week right here on the R&R Pod Network and on Omni Media Group and on Rat Salad Review and on any of your local podcast outlets or national podcast outlets. Check my bags, a South Park review. And, of course, we are sponsored by the Baked Boys Club. Check out thebakedboysclub.com. Use my code SUCKMYBALLSPOD, P-O-D, and you'll save 15% off your order. So if you like your stoner and you like cannabis-related apparel, you're going to like this stuff. Like, it's actually really quality shirts. We were talking about it today offline.
It really is.
Scoop was like, dude, this is really good shirts. I was like, I know, right? Yeah. So check out bakedboysclub.com. And, of course, check out the New Force Order podcast, the podcast I produce each and every week. And, of course, last but not least, patreon.com/StevieRayTV. I'm the managing producer and editor for all his content there. And you can become a subscriber. $3, $5, $25, $30. And you can interact with 10-time tag team champion, one half of Harlem Heat, WWE Hall of Famer, Stevie Ray. Sucka! So sign up, patreon.com/StevieRayTV. Rob, that's all I got for you, bud.
You know, there's also a new tier coming out for Stevie Ray TV. It's $500, and Stevie will come to your house and hit you with a slapjack.
No, that's actually the $10,000 tier.
Oh, my bad.
I can tell you about that more offline. We've got an idea for like a $10,000 tier that would include four stops. So you'd get to hang out with Stevie in Houston. You get to go to Colorado, hang out with Vince. Maybe, you know, jump over to Florida, hang out with Silvio or something else. I don't know, you know, something weird. Big Vito. Hang out and go to Disneyland with him for the day.
Who would not want to go to Disneyland?
Go to Atlanta and hang out with Stevie Richards. I don't know. Do some SR Fitness.
Yeah, Stevie would just big time.
Stevie Ray, Stevie Richards. Hang out with all the Stevies. It's a Stevie Palooza.
It is a Stevie Palooza, actually. There's no shortage of Stevies in Hameen Media Group or Hacker Lean. Well, guys, I appreciate you listening. Matt, as always, I appreciate you being here to do a show with me when I have nobody else to bring on. No, this is actually my idea. I knew you were a fan of TNA in the early days, so I was looking forward to and now that I did this sucked.
What?
I'm kidding, dude. Podcast. I'm fucking with you. No, it wasn't a really good podcast.
I hate you.
I know. I love busting your balls. It's so good.
My balls are not for busting.
They're for sucking.
They're for sucking. Check my bag.
I was never good at carpentry. What episode are we on? We just
dropped episode 64. It is season 4, episode 13, Helen Keller the Musical.
That was a good one.
Not one of my favorites, but it's okay.
No, I liked it. I like all their stuff. It doesn't matter to me.
And then we just got done reviewing. We had Joe Atherton on. We already reviewed it. Just got to edit it up. It'll be out next week. Suck My Balls 65. It is the Great Expectations Pip episode. And I do not like that episode. None of us really like that episode. And it's a really good podcast. In fact, I'd say it was probably my favorite Suck My Balls podcast I've ever did, because most of the podcast, it's us learning about UK culture. So, like, if you're an American idiot like me and you don't know about UK culture and media and how their politics and stuff like that works, I sprinkle those type of questions throughout the podcast so we can learn a bit more about that. So check that out.
I miss old Adders. Is he still cranky?
He's doing great. And he just got his vaccine, so he can go out now. I think tomorrow he's going out for the first time in a year.
Wow. Can you imagine that, dude? Like, how lucky are we in the States that we're able to go freely? I talked to Husey about it the other day. Like, he's been locked down for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They've been locked down. They're not allowed to go out unless it's for essentials, food, medicine. And you can walk around your neighborhood within distance, but you can't – nothing's open. You know what I mean?
That's crazy. Yeah, I can't imagine that. I heard Colorado reopened their restaurants, which were shut down.
We started reopening,
yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that's a good thing. Here in Nashville area, shit's wide open, dude. We don't give a fuck. Well, herd immunity, brother. Herd immunity.
South doesn't care.
No, the South will rise again.
Apparently.
Thanks again for listening to this episode. You can follow RTW on Twitter at RadTurtlesPod. And you can email the show at RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. We appreciate all of your support. You've been listening to RTW Rewind, exclusively here on the R&R Podcast Network.